Well, the scoreboard said I lost today, but what the scoreboard doesn't say is what it is I have found.
Hello and welcome back to the Tennis Connected Studios for April 15th, 2018. I'm Nima Naderi alongside Parsa Sami, and we're here this week to preview the Rolex Monte Carlo Masters. This week's podcast is brought to you by Top Notch Tennis Tours as well as Health IQ. Let's introduce our co-host for this week. Parsa, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. How's it going?
It's going well. I mean, Parsa, for everybody out there, Parsa and I were ready to, you know, light it up on Friday night. But the Skype gods weren't cooperating with us, so we've been derailed for a couple of days, and then we've had this major ice storm here in Toronto. I think some stuff is coming your way in New York. It's just crazy for middle of April to be having this weather. But, you know, I look on TV, and I'm looking at Monte Carlo with the Mediterranean Ocean there and some clay courts, and I'm feeling a little bit better. So that's kind of what I'm going for at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, that setting there with the Mediterranean Sea is just one of the things that is majestic about Monte Carlo. I've always loved that tournament. I've always wanted to visit. I've never been, so I would love to go see it. But I'm excited. Let's get into this tennis, Nima. There's a lot happening and some awesome stuff that I think we have planned today.
Exactly. So, Parsa, for everybody out there, just wanted to break down what our show will consist of today. We're going to talk about Novak Djokovic back with Marion Vida. Our next topic is going to be what's happened on the clay so far, even though it's been a short, you know, clay court season up until this point. We're going to talk about the U.S. Open shot clock that they're introducing later this year in Flushing, Davis Cup, what the environment is bringing currently, especially with them looking to exit. We're going to talk about Alexis Ohanian, who's Serena Williams' husband, and some words that he had of encouragement for her. And then that'll also tie in a little bit with Roger Federer. And then after that, we're going to shift into our draw preview of the four quarters. So, Parsa, let's jump right back into it. We have Novak Djokovic. Recently, we know that on our last podcast, we talked about him splitting with Andre Agassi. And then it was earlier this week announced that he's also done with Radek Stepanek, which to me was very surprising. I thought those guys were completely on the same page. It looked like, you know, oh, I got this new, you know, team and everything is great. But you know, lo and behold, both those guys are done. And you know, his I don't know what you would call him, but the guy who's always been there from day one, basically, Marion Vida, is now back in the mix.
And his biggest fan, Nima. I mean, that's what he is. You know, the biggest fan, the biggest believer in Novak.
I guess you go with the, you know, the girl that you went to the dance with, whatever that saying is, right? And it's kind of like, you know, he's dancing with it again, and let's see what happens. I mean, it's got to have that feel-good factor. But by the same token, from the Djokovic standpoint, he's kind of like, this is what I need, right? Which is great. Now, if we're putting egos aside and animosity and all of that stuff, if you're Marion Vida, this guy X'd you, right? And now he wants you back. So there's definitely that conversation. I know there's a lot of history. There was a lot of success. Then there's the Becker era, the Agassi, the Stepanek, and now he's back in the fold. I think more of this comes down to Vida than Djokovic. I mean, if Vida can put aside his ego and his animosity,
of course he will. Though I think ultimately, like I said, he's the fanboy. You know.
Yeah. So and I
you
think
know, he believes in him, and you know, everyone's human. They're not perfect, and they make mistakes. And I think him coming back is sort of an affirmation of how important, you know, coaches and coaching. There's you don't realize your value until they're gone, you know, and in my own business or in my own coaching profession, kids, I develop them from a young age, and then they go off to college, and they always end up running back home and trying to squeeze in an hour with me when they can. And they realize at that point that when I'm not there, you know, it's over and over and over and over again, repeating the same things and you know, just giving them the advice that they trust and need, their game starts to go down. And so it's sort of you need that little bit of a kicker. And most of the time, I mean, it's they're doing great. You know, they've been set up great, and they just need a little encouragement to say, hey, you're doing great. Your coaches in college are doing wonderful. Keep going. And, you know, in this case, obviously this is the professional game, so it's a little bit different. But it certainly helps to go over the matches post-match with Vida. It's certainly going to help afterwards, because he's going to know that the place that it's coming from is a place of success, and it's a proven relationship. It's something that he knows has worked, versus Agassi and Stefanik. He probably had to work through things, and the unknown was kind of, you know, just not working. The unknown of his body, the unknown of his coaching, the unknown of his staff. I'm not sure why he took this leap, but clearly he's taking some measures to try to recapture some of the glory of the past days, and we're going to remain to see if we can find out, to see if he actually can do it. I think he will. You know, a lot of people are writing him off, saying his body is done, he's toast, the guy's whatever. I just on the metrics of knowing athletes, 29 years old, 30 years old, the guy's not done yet.
No,
100%. He's just not done yet, and I know he's been taking care of his body, and you know, I think he'll continue to make adjustments until he finds his game and his health and all of it. But to say he's done, you know, what do you think, Nima? You think he's going to win a slam in the next 5 years?
100%. He's going to win more than a slam. I mean, I think that
there you go.
I think that the thing is with the, you know, the Vida situation is that, you know, it's kind of like a parent, right? You know, when you do good parenting, even the kids might, you know, rebel, do their own thing, go to college, come back. Then once they get over 30, they're like, oh, you know what? These people, you know, my parents were super influential in my life, and they were very important to my success. And maybe that's kind of what Djokovic is looking at this point. Like, I've gone through all of these guys, these superstar, super coaches, the Becker, Agassiz, but you know what? Maybe I just got to stay with the guy who was there with me from the beginning. And it looks like that's, you know, but I wouldn't be surprised if he also brings in somebody else, you know, to complement Vida and stuff like that, which is definitely, but I don't know who's left, right? I mean, you know, even Ivanišević is with Raonic, you know, Bjorkman's doing some other stuff. Edberg's not really in the game anymore. So there's nobody really out there that I can think of.
He's got to steal Norman from Wawrinka.
Yeah, well, they're done. They've been done now for a year. And
okay,
now,
so
yeah.
Right.
But Norman just wants to be at his academy in Sweden. He's not really
looking. Until he gets $1.5 million a year from Djokovic, and then he's good to go.
Maybe, yeah. Then he'll be back after. He'll be racking up those air miles. So we'll see. But it's going to be, I mean, for me, it's when we get into the draw, there's one thing that's definitely here for Djokovic. It's that home tournament. I mean, the guy lives here, right? He's got a restaurant there. He's always in Monte Carlo. So it's like, you know, it's the feel-good factor as well. And he's won the tournament before, which is a very hard tournament to win, as we know, because there's a guy named Rafa Nadal who's going for his 11th title here, right? Which is, you know,
insane.
And but he's able to grab a couple of these. So you know that the guy can play on this court. We'll see how it goes. But we'll get into Djokovic a little bit later on. Now, what's happened so far on clay? We have, you know, a tournament in Morocco going on today. We have Kyle Edmund and Pablo Andujar, you know, blast from the past, just kicking things off. Then in Houston, we have Tennis Sangren, who is following up that success that he had in Australia, pretty much did nothing after that, but he's taking on defending champion Steve Johnson in the final a little bit later on today in River Oaks. We had Kiki Bertens winning last week in Charleston. Great win for her. Women, I believe, have Fed Cup this coming up week. And then they're going to have Stuttgart, which is that very successful indoor clay tournament in Germany next week. So watch out for that one. And then obviously in a bit, we're going to get rolling off into the Monte Carlo draw. So any words? I mean, Parcel, how much, you know, it's interesting because I always look at this Houston event. It's a cool tournament. I would love to visit it one day. We've had a photographer there now for the last few years. How much merit can we put on this event? You know what I'm saying? In terms of success as it then takes forward into, you know, onto the Euro clay. Because, you know, all
it, it doesn't. Yeah, it never
exactly.
Has
exactly. It? Because you see, like, you know, like a couple years ago, Isner won it, and then all these ESPN writers are like, oh, and now Isner's going to win the French. You know what I'm saying? And, like, I'm like, what are you talking about, man? You know what I'm saying? Like, you're talking about different conditions, different clay, different opponents. Everything is in the States. You know what I mean? It's not.
And you're playing Americans on clay. Yeah, you're not playing
exactly.
You know, there was, kids who grew up on clay.
Exactly. If you look at the draw, which is a credit to U.S. tennis, which I was very happy about in a way, but of the 28, you know, field draw, 15 of the players were U.S. players. That's more than 50%. That's crazy, right? And then you had the likes of Kyrgios who came in. He bowed out to Karlovic. You have Karlovic, who the guy's like 39 years old, you know, making the semis. And then, I mean, Isner was probably a little bit tired from playing last week in Nashville. But then same could be said for, I guess, Johnson and those guys. So, and then Taylor Fritz had a good event. You know that he's not a good clay court player, but he's in the semis. So, again, you can't really put a lot of merit, even though I really like the Houston event. And I hope that it keeps going forward. Next up, we have, you know, we're not there yet because we still got to go through the clay, then the grass, but the U.S. Open. Which is in your neck of the woods. They introduced it this week, and they confirmed that there's going to be a shot clock on the court, which to me is really cool because it's another thing in this very distracted era that we're living in. Something else for people to look at. Oh, my cell phone? No, let me look at the shot clock. Oh, look, you know, let me look at whatever. And you know, it's going to be 25 seconds from when a point ends. Another rule that they're going to instill is that as soon as players walk on court, they have 7 minutes from that moment to get ready and warm up and get firing. And let's be honest, I mean, I think these rules were really put into place for three players on the men's side. Can't really think of any on the women's. I think they play a little bit quicker, but definitely for Rafa, who likes to take his time. For Djokovic, who likes to take his time. For Del Potro, who plays, he's a very methodical guy who plays very slow. And I think Cilic is kind of getting there now too. You see he's got that little bit of a tick now. He bounces the ball like 50 times before he serves. So I think they're like, we've got to speed this up. You know, there's TV. We got to get through these matches, especially five sets on the men's side. We got to keep moving. And I think that's kind of, they maybe had the pressure from TV. I don't know what it was, but I think it's a great rule. I mean,
I still can't wait to see the details of it. You know, when it starts, when is it considered to be the person is ready to serve? You know, if you get to the line with 22 seconds or 3 seconds left on the clock and you start bouncing 50 times, like what happens if you get to the line and you have to tie your shoelace? And what do? You just like toss the ball real quick and throw in like an 8-year-old second serve?
It's one of those things where, you know, before the clock was in the umpire's hand. He was the only, he or she was the only person to see it.
There's some judgment there. You know, if you're arguing with the chair umpire, like, you know,
no,
does
but
that count?
You're right. But this is a situation now where when it's right there for the whole world and all the fans in the stadium to see it, they can start calling you on it. You know, fan can start yelling out, what's going on here? You know what I mean? And so you're going to, and especially in New York, you can definitely see some stuff like
just
that.
Just adds taking, to the chaos of the 2 weeks at New York.
Yeah. So that's going to be cool, and I think that's going to be an awesome initiative, and I definitely encourage everybody else. You know, Indian Wells is going to jump on that too.
You wait for like the outside courts when there's like some crazy match, and it's like, what was the Del Potro match last year?
Yeah, with Dominic Thiem, yeah.
Yeah, and then it's going to be like shock, like these guys are like killing themselves at each point. This is the major long rallies, and then people are like, they just have another thing to scream at people about. It's going to be actually funny.
Exactly. So we'll see how it goes, but I definitely think it's a great call by the USTA, and we'll see how it goes down when we're covering that event in a few months. Okay, so now off to Davis Cup. So obviously we know that, you know, Davis Cup has been a hot topic this year because they're looking to get rid of it, scrap it, just do like a couple week event at the end of the year, every 2 years, whatever it is. And you had some interesting things to say because you were talking about the environment, especially in Valencia in Spain. I think a lot of it had to do with Nadal coming back. They picked an excellent venue, this bull ring. It was packed. There was that five-hour doubles match. And then Ferrer had that epic the fifth rubber there that he won against, I believe, Cole Shriver. And, like, that's cool. You know what
when
I mean?
When there's patriotism, it matters, Davis
Cup.
Yeah,
exactly.
And Spanish people, historically, they get behind their anything that they put their country's...
And it didn't hurt that Nadal was going crazy. You saw all those gifts and everything with him pumping his fist and going nuts, and it was amazing. And you had a couple things to talk about with your club and some of the people there that they were talking about the double action, and they were saying it was so cool. And
yeah, it was. I kept getting over and over again people saying, "Did you see that doubles match? Did you see that doubles match?" Because it was the best doubles match I've seen in a long time. You know, with a packed stadium, with a lot on the line, and two players on clay where it was there was a lot of touch and power, and every rally was just back and forth, and it's super exciting. I've been finding, I don't know how everyone else is out there, and you know, we don't give doubles its due, but I've enjoyed watching doubles. The points that get created are incredible. The angles that get hit, the power, you bring in a guy like Jack Sock who can whip balls left and right, and then you get another guy who, you know, they're super strong tactically, and they start changing different things, and you can see how they're trying to, you know, it's like watching American football or, you know, any real sport where tactics start to make a big difference. It's, you know, you can see things happening in doubles versus the singles. A lot of times it's one guy and it's a little bit harder and it's a little bit more physical. And so if someone deteriorates, it becomes a little bit more challenging. The doubles is a lot about where you put the ball, how you put the ball, how you attack the weakness, and how you overcome those tactical changes. And so I do appreciate the doubles quite a bit. And in front of 20,000 people, or how many people were in Valencia, and a screaming crowd, it was awesome. Mm-hmm. That's what I have to say about that.
Absolutely. And I think that you're going to see, you know, a lot of the players came, like Leighton Hewitt, obviously, who's Matt major supporter of Davis Cup. He came out and said, "Listen, what do you think about this now?" You know, Lucas Puig, he was in another tie, but he's even watching that match.
Right.
And it's just like, there's definitely, but this is the thing, right? You know, we talk about Monte Carlo this week, and this, you know, there's a sexy venue in Monaco and the Principality, and obviously people are jacked about it. And Nadal's back, and Nadal was in that tie. He was out for a couple months. Then you have the Bull Ring in Valencia. Well, you know what? You have like this indoor court in Croatia where it's like cold outside and there's nothing.
Or the Davis Cup here in the United States.
Yeah.
There's no one there.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So this is what, so there you go, right? So I think that's what maybe the ITF would say. Like, okay, yeah, 100% that this tie, specific tie in Valencia was a massive success, but look at the variables that went into that, right? You have a very partisan crowd that is super jacked. You got Nadal going crazy. You got these epic 4-5 hour matches, right? You got a greatest of all time player also in attendance. And those dynamics brought forth a very successful product. But if you don't have that, you don't have the weather, you don't have the sexy venue, you don't have the crazy crowd, warm conditions, it kind of loses a little bit of that thing, right? So that, you know, the aura about it. So I think they're saying, okay, well, we're taking what, like, why don't we do it in Valencia for everybody? And, you know, if they can kind of get something like that cooking, then you're going to see a situation where, you know, that will bring forth that type of success on a more consistent basis. So I think the argument definitely is there for that as well. But, I mean, maybe they just have to do a better job as an overall of picking venues that are more suitable to creating this type of environment. But I think it's a lot easier said than done.
Yeah, and a lot of people look at the States, I guess, because the corporations and the money that's behind it is usually coming from something that's tied to the United States. And if people can get, or companies can get exposure, then it becomes more valuable for them. You know, there's a function of the lack of that American star. I'm sure if Federer was under the American flag, I'm sure there would have been a ton of people at Belmont, Tennessee. It probably wouldn't have even been in Belmont, Tennessee. It would have been, you know, somewhere like Chicago or Madison Square Garden, and it would have been packed because it's Federer, you know.
Exactly.
So you know, that there's also that you know, I don't know how much of this adjusting is because it's lost traction, you know, in major countries, or if it's lost traction worldwide. But clearly in Spain last weekend, it was incredible. It was an incredible atmosphere and something that you'd love to see replicated in every country.
Of course. And okay, Parsa, before we get into the draw, our last point here is going to be on Alexis Ohanian, who is not a tennis player, but he's married to the greatest, maybe overall tennis player ever, in Serena Williams. And he has some really interesting things to say about his wife that you made some amazing points as before we got on air here, and then that will also lead us into a segue for Roger Federer. So what were your points that you wanted to share on that one?
What I loved about hearing his quotes and what he said about it was that he felt like in business that his business was the hardest working profession in the world. You know, yes. That he was the hardest working person until he met Serena, and that there was no there's no replacement for you know, just having to be out there and seeing what the high pressure situations are, and you know, he actually said it's a humbling experience seeing really what high pressure situations actually look like professionally. Mm-hmm. Seeing just what it takes to actually be that great is a work ethic. It is a work ethic on another level. And what he's talking about is the daily, what is it, Nima? The mm-hmm. daily work, the lifestyle that it goes into it is just, it's never ending. Everything matters. What you're putting into your mouth, how much you're sleeping, how much you're resting, how much you're working out. It is all planned. It is all a 365-day-a-week job, mm-hmm. no matter what. If you had a child, then you have to measure it. And then he goes on to say, you know, that in business, that there are metrics or success metrics that you can always find mm-hmm. based on what you're doing. So, you know, if you say, my company made, you know, this much money, and then another company says, well, I made a dollar more, and then this company says, well, I've only been in business for 2 months, so for the 1 month of da da da, or the 2 months that we've been in business, we're actually five times more valuable than you because we made as much money as you did in 12 months. Mm-hmm. So you can always skew the statistics. And what he says, which is very true, he says, but in sport, there's a winner and a loser. And you can't delude yourself into thinking there's some other way to compare or measure. You're the best or you're not. And it was so, for me, that's profound coming from somebody who's not an athlete or not in professional sport. Because ultimately, that is what it is, and you prepare day and night for the unknown, to hopefully react and to compete when it counts the most in the best situation. So, and that begs to lead to Federer, to Djokovic, to Nadal, to the greatest champions of our sports, of Serena Williams, obviously, mm-hmm. Martina Navratilova, Steffi Graf, who time and time again continue to come up clutch in the most crucial moments in sport, and they do it in the biggest stages with the most people watching worldwide, and it continues to be just as good as you were the last time you played. And as you were saying, Nima, off air, you were saying, all right, you know, Federer is the greatest ever, and then now he's lost two in a row, and everyone's like, okay, he's done.
Yeah,
you know, and so all of a sudden, Federer went from 18-0 in 2018 to being done. Yeah. You know, because now he's 18-2. So it's neither. This is the nature of tennis, and how difficult is it? Because Federer, the truth is that he lost those last two matches, and he didn't deviate from pulling out the clay court, where it could have been very tempting for him to be like, I haven't done what I wanted to do, and you know, I'm going to enter a clay court tournament because I need to get that success into my system. He's yes. like, not at all. He's like, this was planned a long time ago. Everyone, you know, he knew he wasn't going to play the clay court, and that's why he was prepared to announce it right after he lost in Miami, because this is the plan. And so he doesn't, his success is measured by what he has done, but his planning and how he prepares is daily existence. This is just a part of the process for him. Whether he wins or loses is all just a part of it. He lives and breathes being a champion. And so I think, I know that being a champion day in and day out for these guys is a full-time job. It is who they are. And I think it's amazing that their success matrix, as Ohanian calls it, is based on their results. And that's it. There's no arguing it. You know, the guy's won how many slams now? 20?
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing.
And Serena's won 23. I mean, these are some,
and she's arguably the greatest player ever. I mean, how could you argue with that? You
know, exactly.
And you know she's going to come back. Do you have any doubt that she's not going to come back here? I mean, she's lost a couple of matches, but she'll find her way. She's definitely good enough, you know. So and wants it.
And before we get into the draw, I mean, I'm going to end off with a guy who actually will go down, I think, as a little bit of the villain on tour. I know him pretty well just because of some other stuff that we've done together. But Robin Soderling, and he said that, listen, guys. You know, these guys like Federer and Nadal are done when they want to be done. Bottom line, they're gonna because they have what it takes, and they've shown that Serena is right there, and Djokovic is right there in that conversation as well too. These are multiple Grand Slam champions that have won every Grand Slam, all four of them. So listen, you know what? They're gonna be done when they want to be done. They'll figure out a way. Yes, they're not gonna be as good as they were 10 years ago. You know what I'm saying? But they can still be there and do some great things. And Djokovic is still young. I mean, this guy's only 30. I think he's turning 31 in a few weeks, but he's still very young. And he's not like, he's got to get through that elbow thing, you know, get that aura back. And then it's just, you got to grind, right? And then, I mean, we'll see how he does this week, but that's why we're here for this draw. So, Parsa, without further ado, let's get into this draw that's held in the Principality, you know, very sexy place in Monaco, as we alluded to. We have Rafa Nadal as the number one seed, back as the number one player in the world. His first official tour event. I know he played DC last week, but since the Australian Open, which is, think about that for a second. I mean, you know, this is also going to be very interesting for me, Parsa, because on a little bit of a side note, you have Nadal playing Australia with Djokovic, I believe, in the quarters in the fifth set to Cilic, right? He showed up in Acapulco, practiced a bit, pulled the ripcord, he didn't play there, didn't go to even show up at Indian Wells or Miami. Zero. Plays DC, rolls Zverev and Kohlschreiber without even blinking, destroyed both of them comprehensively, and they both play very well on clay. And now he's back here in Monte Carlo going for his 11th title. Now, yes, he's not going to be match hardened from all of the, you know, like the hard court season that he had last year leading into the clay, but he's definitely going to be way fresher, which is scary, and he's a year older, which you would have to think is necessary for more success. And he's going full tilt. You know, he's playing Monte Carlo, Barca, Madrid, Rome, and then the French. So he's got five there. And then he's probably going to play a warm-up. I think he's doing Queens, Wimbledon, then probably in the Toronto, Cincy, and then U.S. So I think that he's going to be, this could be a good, you know, swing for him right now. Because if his body holds up, because he's had like 2 months off, basically, he could be rolling now. It just depends on, you know, the physicality of it and what his confidence is. But Parsa, you have anything to add to that before we get into his actual quarter
here? Yeah, I mean, it could definitely springboard him to another French Open title for sure. Yes. I think he's going to be very dangerous. And then I think we're going to see the knee straps, Nima, yes, starting at Wimbledon, Queen's Club to the U.S. Open. I think we'll see the white tape around his knees. I think eventually, I think it's just unfortunately with Nadal, it's just a matter of time. He's never going to go long stretches being, you know, he's not going to not have another health break in the next 2 years. I would say that's going to be very, very hard to, yeah, you know, if he stays healthy through the end of the U.S. Open, it would be a miracle.
Yes, exactly.
It's just a lot of tennis, and I don't know how I'd work his schedule, to be honest with you. But maybe this is his schedule. Maybe it needs to be just Australia and then off and then clay, dominate it, you know, play maybe a tune-up, maybe skip Wimbledon altogether. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
But Wimbledon is favoring him now, the way the surface is. And then playing one or none of the Master Series leading to the U.S. Open, you know, how is he going to schedule and prioritize as he ages, like Federer has? I think it'll be an interesting topic.
I think, obviously he loves Monte Carlo. Who wouldn't, right? And the success that he's had here. And it's clay. Barca, I mean, how can he not play that tournament, right? It's in his home country. Madrid, even though the conditions are garbage, let's be honest, they should move that event. It's, again, in Spain. If I'm Nadal, this clay court season, see, this is also tricky, too, because he has so many points to defend, right? Won Monte Carlo last year, won Barcelona, won Madrid, and then I believe he lost a team in the quarters of Rome. If I'm Nadal, if I go 3-for-3 again, even though Rome is an amazing tournament and the conditions are very close to Roland Garros, I'm probably going to rest during that week because I've won three, get ready for the French, and then he's going to probably play on grass. I would advise against it. I would get ready for the hard because then he's got to defend the U.S. Open. Let's not forget about that.
Now, Nima, before you go that far now, how is he getting through this section? That's what I want to know.
Well, that's what we got to talk about. I mean, but so he's got a bye first round. He's playing the winner of Aljaz Benedin or qualifier. Qualifiers were all completed today. Had some notable guys like Tsitsipas and a couple other guys that were not. I mean, nothing. Chardy, I believe, qualified as well too. So I think watch out for those two guys. We had Karen Hatchinoff take out Kokkinakis 5-4 just a couple minutes ago. So that one is recorded. So Hatchinoff is through. Then we have Mannarino and Gilles Simon. I think you would maybe favor Mannarino there, but I don't think he can challenge Nadal on this surface. Then we have Novak Djokovic, also in this quarter as the 9th seed, playing a qualifier in his first round. He takes on the winner of Chorich and Benito. Chorich is going to be tough. I mean, he's in form. He's like kind of the poor man's Djokovic. He's idolized him. You know, his game is very reminiscent of the, you know, the Hall of Fame Serb. So we're going to see how that breaks down. Then we have Rublev and Hase. Not really the best on clay, but they're both having, you know, pretty good last couple of years. And then we have Dominic Thiem, who I think we can with confidence say he's the second or third best clay courter in the world. I don't think we can, a lot of people would go against us on that one. Also in this quarter, so you have, you know, the highlights obviously are Nadal, Thiem, Djokovic. With all of that said, Parsa, for me, I cannot go against Nadal here making the semifinals. For me, it would be shocking. Let's just say that way. I don't care if Djokovic is here, and I don't care if Thiem is here. Right here and now. Because remember, Thiem is coming in off of an injury. We really, even though he's an animal on clay and he's a super strong guy, we don't know how he's going to pull up with his ankle problem that he developed in Indian Wells. Djokovic has zero confidence right now, even though I really hope that he has a strong week just for an overall, because we'll get into that. I don't really think a lot of people are, you know, going crazy over Marin Cilic being the number two seed at all of these events leading into the French Open. I mean, for me, that's not really exciting, even though I have a lot of respect for Cilic. For me, it's going to be, you know, Nadal into the semifinals.
Yeah, I can't argue with you there. I mean, for sure, it's you know, Nadal. I mean, what else can you say? King of clay, wins everything.
Yes.
There's only one guy that can be there, and it's got to be Rafa. I don't care who's in his way. I think he's proven over and over again that he'll find somebody as a defeated opponent in his way, whether it's Nadal, Federer, whatever. It doesn't matter. He's taken him down as long as he's healthy. And he looks very, very good in practice.
Yes, exactly. I was going to actually mention that. I've seen some, you know, the Instagram videos that they put up.
Yeah.
People are there. He's just lacing the ball.
I mean,
he's just
ripping. He's just like, yes, I'm on clay again. And
yeah,
it's awesome.
Exactly.
You know, so there's no doubt about that. And, you know, for me, it's Nadal into the semi here.
Okay. And then, so we got quarter number two coming up. We have Grigor Dimitrov, another, you know, resident of Monte Carlo. He's been there. You know, he just looks beautiful hitting that extension on his backhand. But so what, right? Like, what's the metric as we were talking about? He's been doing nothing lately. Once again, he got that overinflated ranking, as we both talked about at the end of the year with Cincy, World Tour Finals, all of that stuff, because a lot of guys were absent. And he took advantage of that, and that's great for him. But for me, with all of that said, I'm still going to take Grigor to make the semis here, only because, I mean, you got Ramos Vinoles, who made the finals here last year. I don't think he repeats. Batista Agut, who's obviously a guy who definitely play on this surface, but doesn't have a lot of firepower. Denis Shapovalov, first time he's playing this event. He looks like he could do some damage here, but does he have the experience? We got Goffin, who can definitely play on clay, but for me, the problem is that he's coming in off of that eye injury, not a lot of confidence right now. So for me, kind of a weak section, and there's a few of those here, but I'm going with Dimitrov to make the semifinals. How about yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I think solid pick, but I'm going to go with the feel-good here.
Okay.
I think Ramos Vinoles, because he did play well here last year, and he had a similar sort of draw. He worked his way through a very manageable draw, and I think this draw is manageable as well. I don't think there's something that he wouldn't be shocking if he got through. Maybe Dimitrov would be a good win, but I'm not sure Dimitrov will even be there with Tennis Sandgren looming and the great, you know, potential either finalist or winner of Houston.
Yes.
Who it's going to be interesting. You know, you got the great American, Jared Donaldson as well there. I don't know. I think that ultimately it's going to be Ramos Vinolas, only because, you know, we've yet to see who's in form on the clay yet.
Yes.
Or not. And I know that from last year that he is going to have good vibes, and good vibes are important. And especially on clay, you need momentum. And, you know, he's definitely going to feel it when he gets on the grounds there.
Okay. So, Parsa, before we get into the second half of this podcast, I'm going to give a quick shout out here to Health IQ. Health IQ uses science and data to secure lower rates on life insurance for health conscious people, including tennis players, runners, cyclists, strength trainers, vegans, and more. From a tennis perspective, according to a 2007 study in the British Journal of Sports Medicine, tennis players who play twice a week have a 17% lower body fat than the age match controls. According to a 1980 study in the Journal of Medicine and Science in Sports and Exercise, average VO2 max is 40% higher for male tennis players and 32% higher for females. As you can clearly see, there's a lot of health benefits to playing tennis. From a savings standpoint, 56% of Health IQ customers save between 4% and 33% on their life insurance. These savings are exclusive to Health IQ. To see if you qualify, get your free quote today at healthiq.com/TC, which stands for Tennis Connected, or mention the promo code TC when you talk to a Health IQ agent at the following 1-800-549-1664 number. Okay, Parsa, so as we get into the bottom half of the draw, again, not very star-studded, to be completely honest with you. I mean, it's led by the third quarter here by Lucas Pouille, who, again, looks strong and fit. And you would have to think that this surface, especially, you know, being so close to France, would favor him, especially the environment. He takes on the winner of Misha Zverev and Felix Auger-Aliassime, who are on court right now. And Misha is rolling the young Canadian there, who's in his first appearance here. We've got Richard Gasquet, who, you know, is also going to love this court. We have Diego Schwartzman, who I know you can have, you know, some fond words for coming forward. We've got Fabio Fognini, who's played well here in the past. We have Struff, who can hit a massive ball. Gilles Muller, who, for me, is not really a clay courter, even though he's got that lefty serve. We've got Alex Zverev, who could definitely be dangerous here. I mean, he's the number 3 seed. Remember, he won Rome last year. Another draw where if he's feeling good and he's not jaded over Davis Cup and, you know, playing deep in Miami, you know, this is not that long ago, right? He played Miami finals, lost to Isner in a tough one, then had to completely transition over, went and played on the clay. Nadal destroyed him. So I don't know. I mean, it's going to be a little bit touch and go. For me, in this quarter, I'm going to go with Lucas Pouille to make the semis, just because I think he's going to have, you know, the strongest guy here, even though for me, the second guy would probably be Diego Schwartzman. You know, love what he's doing. He's up to, what, 15 in the world, which is tremendous for him. And I'm going to go with Lucas Pouille in the semis.
Yeah, as you mentioned with Schwartzman, I think that he's the one that's believing the most. It's really just the physicality of him and his ball. I think that Monte Carlo will afford him the opportunity and the right pace of the court in order to take big rips at the ball. And I think that'll help him control the center a little bit more, and he'll be able to get out there and cover the left and the right side of the court. At the same time, be relentless in what he's doing and allow tactics to be a bigger play. And I think he's one of the smarter players we have on tour, and definitely one of the most creative. And so, but for those two reasons, I think he's going to be the one that gets into the semi here.
Okay. And as we move into the fourth and final quarter, it's led by, as we said, not a very overwhelming or fan favorite, Marin Cilic as the number 2 seed. And then we have Carino Busta as the number 8 seed. Other key players here are Kyle Edmund. A lot of people starting to get on the Edmund bandwagon. Had a couple people on Parsa on Twitter saying that this guy's going to win the French Open this year. And I was like, what are you talking about? You know what I mean? He's got obviously a rocket forehand. He's actually, you know, the Brit does have a great game for clay. He's got that super Western forehand that he can club from anywhere on the court. He's got a very durable backhand. He's a very fit professional guy. And he's got a nice kicker as well, kick serve. So I think when you look at his best surface, for me, undoubtedly it is clay. Now, does he have the confidence, does he have the experience to plow through 6 weeks on the dirt and really put himself in a position to be a top five favorite. Maybe a top five favorite. Definitely not the number one favorite, but maybe I could see him being a top five favorite after, you know, the next 4 or 5 weeks are in the books. Some other key players, we got Keenan Shikori playing against Thomas Burdick here. That looks to be a nice blockbuster first rounder. We got Milos Raonic, who had a very nice Indian Wells in Miami. How does he use this, you know, a little stretch here? And you know he's really gearing up for the grass court season with Ivan Isovic. They're both licking their chops for that. Then we've got Verdasco and Pablo Cuevas, who have had some decent results on clay. We've got Zoomer, who can play on the surface. And we got Cilic. For me, with all of the, you know, the players that I've listed, Parsa, I'm actually going to go with Corino Busta, who has really, to me, Parsa, I'm not a big believer in his game, that this guy can do great things in tennis as an overall win slams, win masters, 1000s. But I think what he has shown is that he's got such a consistent game that he can go through types of tournaments where there are opportunities and make deep runs and then lose to somebody who's just better. And I think you're going to see that again here. And I think for me, he's going to the semis to play Lucas Pouy in this section. How about yourself?
Yeah, no shame in that at all.
No, absolutely not.
He's the best of the next crop. I don't know if he's a superstar champion, but he's top 10 in the world. And, sure. You know, his ability to be consistent is of success in itself and of a great standard and great quality. Perhaps he doesn't have the physical gifts that some of the others do, but he definitely has the champion mindset and the champion game. And I too also will be going towards Corina Busta in that I feel like he does put himself exactly what you said in the positions when the opportunity does exist. He takes advantage of it almost every single time, and there's an opportunity here. The one dangerous guy in this section that I see is possibly someone like a Verdasco or someone who can actually put the ball through the court, you know, maybe a Medvedev, who, you know, it depends on how he's moving and how he's clubbing the ball. But if these guys sort of catch a little bit of fire, it's the type of court where you can, it's an advantage to be able to strike the ball massive, and you'll have the time and the ball will sit up correctly for you to do so. They won't be Nadal, but they could give themselves a chance here. So
yes,
we'll see. But I got Corina Busta as well.
Okay. Yeah, and Medvedev's match is coming up shortly, as right now Misha Zverev leads Felix Auger-Aliassime 6-2, 4-2. So it looks like that one's coming up shortly. Okay, Parsa, so ending off here, I have Nadal, Dimitrov, Lucas Pouy, and Corino Busta as my final four this week. I have Nadal getting through Dimitrov. I have Lucas Pouy getting through Corino Busta for your finalists. And then I have Nadal taking out Pouy, and I believe a relatively easy final, maybe like 3-2, and winning his 11th title here. How about yourself?
Yeah, I've got a Nadal Ramos Vinolas
in a rematch of last year.
Rematch?
Oh no, sorry.
A great match.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I don't think it's going to be that straightforward. I think that's probably going to be more like the final.
Okay.
And played like that, I think Nadal will be very tested by that point. And I think he'll take care of him, but not so easy. And then I think it's going to be Schwartzman versus Corino Busta. And I think this is where Schwartzman makes his push into the top 10 in the world. I think he's going to get very close with another strong result.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I'm going to have Schwartzman upending Busta. And then you know, I think we're going to see something feisty from Nadal and Schwartzman in the final there. But I don't think Schwartzman is going to win a set. But I think it's going to be close. I think it's going to be a lot more surprising to most people. You know, something like a 5-5, 5-4, but a long 5-5, you know, 2 hours, 15 minutes, like nothing too straightforward and definitely dangerous with tricky moments, because I think Schwartzman deserves that respect. Let's see. Hopefully he doesn't lose first round.
No. And it's, you know, just to end off here, Parsa, before we're done, if you look at, I just want to talk about Djokovic's draw, just based on what he needs to do to get through. We don't know exactly who his opponent is just yet because they haven't placed in the qualifiers, but he's potentially playing, you know, qualifier first round, then Chorich second round, Team third round, Nadal quarters, Dimitrov semis, and then Cilic finals. That's projected. That's rough, man. And look at, and it's amazing because you only have 6 of the top 10 players in this tournament, and he's the 9th seed. So if you had the likes of, you know, Federer and Del Potro and a couple other guys present, he would even be seeded, you know, lower. And as the 9th seed, look how tough his draw is. So that just goes to show you how important it is to have a higher seed, because you're going to get a little bit of a better draw, right? Even though Nadal is still in this quarter and he's got Thiem and Djokovic lurking, I mean, that's why you play, right? And that's why you want good results. So you kind of give yourself a little bit of a breather, you know, not to play these, you know, rock star guys super early on. So at any rate, I mean, you know, Parsa and I will be back next week to wrap up Monte Carlo and look forward to the rest of the clay court season. In the meantime, you can follow Parsa at ParsaSammy as well as on Twitter and Instagram. He's got a couple good accounts, so make sure to follow him there. You can follow myself at Tennis Connected. You can also follow all of our coverage throughout the week on TennisConnected.com and follow us on all of our social medias. And please also download, subscribe, and comment on this podcast on iTunes. Parsa, thank you very much for joining us this week.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody out there, for listening. Have a great week. Enjoy the clay on Monte Carlo, as well as make sure to hit up Top Notch Tennis Tours for any tickets that you guys need from Monte Carlo this week, from Madrid, Roma, as well as Grand Slam Tennis Tours as we get through closer to the French Open and Wimbledon. Finally, to help out a few, a big shout out. Be good. Enjoy all the clay, and we'll talk to you guys soon.